please the court, there were 5 counts of conduct alleged by the guardian ad litem in support of the motion to remove the Covingtons as guardians. The first one was the Covingtons' arbitrary and capricious refusal to submit Ceci for a psychiatric evaluation. The second one was the Covingtons' insistence on continuing to provide weapons to their adult incapacitated daughter. The third was the decision to arbitrarily and capriciously discontinue the use of Zoloft, Ceci's use of Zoloft. The fourth was the decision to arbitrarily and capriciously insist on continuing to self-diagnose Ceci's behaviors as headaches. And the last one, the fifth one, is that the Covingtons insisted on continuing to provide dangerous over-the-counter medications and supplements to Ceci without advising or getting permission from the group home to do so. Those 5 counts, taken at face value, sound pretty bad. They sound like they would be something that a reasonable person might consider removing a guardian for that type of conduct. The problem is that the record here does not support a single one of those counts of conduct, the way they were pled and the way the evidence was presented by the guardian ad litem. There are 3 what I think are undisputable problems with the orders and the findings issued by the 2 trial courts below. Absolutely, Your Honor. That's absolutely correct.
That's really what we need to be looking at.
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor. Completely agree with you. The problem is that when we get to the second stage of the reinstatement, we're dealing with an order removing, and the grounds that were set out in the removal order are relevant to Judge King's subsequent order denying the motion for reinstatement and his subsequent findings of fact. So we start with Judge Furchel's order. Judge Furchel's order, and let me back up and make this real clear. When the guardian ad litem moved to remove, to have the Covingtons removed as guardians, he alleged 2 statutory grounds under Section 761 of the Probate Code. One was cruel treatment, and the other was failure to maintain. Both of those grounds enable a guardian ad litem to move forward and get a removal without giving notice to the guardian. The problem is that when Judge Furchel entered his order removing the Covingtons, he added a 3rd ground. And the 3rd ground was gross misconduct and gross mismanagement.
That would really be a problem if you were appealing
that. It's still a problem because then it carried over. Judge King depended in part on those grounds in his findings and in his ruling. I would agree with that.
Okay. So even if you want to argue about that he shouldn't have found on the 3rd ground because he couldn't do that ex parte, if we find one of the other 2 grounds, that doesn't really matter.
Couldn't agree with you more. Absolutely, Your Honor. That's true. So that's the first error that we have that's clear and undisputed. The guardian ad litem doesn't dispute that was error for Judge Furchel to include it, gross misconduct and gross mismanagement, as one of the grounds. Then we move to Judge King's order. Judge King's order includes as the conduct for which the Covingtons were removed, and the language is, I want to make sure I get the specific language correct here. He says, one of the reasons was the refusal to control the behavior of the ward from setting booby traps with the marbles. This is the whole marble issue that I think the court's familiar with from reading the brief. Well, the problem is that the marble situation was never pleaded as a ground for removal. Not one of those counts included the marbles. And number 2, how on earth could the Covingtons have been somehow negligent or made some sort of misstep by refusing to control her behavior at the group home when they weren't even present? That's a big problem for that order. And then finally, the 3rd one that I think is very clear is finding of fact number 33, which I think is very important. That is the only finding in which Judge King finds that there was actually cruel treatment. The basis of the cruel treatment in finding of fact 33 is that the Covingtons refused to submit Ceci for not psychiatric evaluation, but psychiatric treatment. That was not alleged as a ground. It was psychiatric evaluation, not treatment. And what I really think is important about that finding is that it really shows what's going on here. And if you take a 30,000-foot view of this record, I think it is absolutely reasonable for the Covingtons to have had this concern. This was their concern. Their daughter, Ceci, was beginning to require time, attention, and care from the group home that the group home didn't want to give. The group home wanted her controlled. And again, the caveat is, I'm not saying this is what the group home did. I'm saying that this was a reasonable concern for Ceci's parents and guardians, that the group home was intent on obtaining a psychiatric evaluation as a first step to psychiatric treatment, which would have meant psychotropic drugs, which would have meant a chemical straitjacket. That was the concern of the Covingtons. I absolutely agree with you, Your Honor, and I meant to make that very clear. I'm not saying that that's what they were doing. I'm saying that was a legitimate concern for the Covingtons.
I thought they were asked if they would like to move their daughter to a place elsewhere, and they said no.
That's absolutely true, Your Honor. They did.
So I guess that concern wasn't too bad, or they would have done it.
Well, at that point, they were still the guardians, and they were at that point able to keep that from happening. Also, the reason that they did not, at that point, decide to take her and remove her from the home is because she was happy. She was doing well there. And what you will see in this record over and over and over again is that these people's chief concern is their daughter's safety and well-being. They did not want to remove her from an environment in which she was happy, in which she appeared to be doing well, because at that time they felt that they could continue to keep the group home from administering psychotropic drugs. If I could just respond to that, and then I promise I will. I think, again, the thought process at that point was, we do think that there's maybe something afoot here, but we think that we're still in a position to protect our daughter from that. And we think that the benefits of the home at this point outweigh any sort of risks that we think we can control.
Okay.
So the first ground, the arbitrary and capricious refusal to submit for a psychiatric evaluation. The problem with that is, number one, they were refusing at this time. They made that very clear over and over. This is not an absolute blanket. We're never going to submit her. It's hold on. Let's not necessarily take that step right now because we probably don't need to.
But you just told us we make it over and over.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm not quite sure I understand.
Like they said, it isn't like you're trying to make the point that it's just a temporary. It's not we're forever this way. But then in the same sentence, you tell us over and over.
Because the problem is that the group home made the requests over and over and over within such a short period of time. That's what I'm trying to express. So the real problem with number one, the arbitrary and capricious refusal to submit for psychiatric evaluation, is that it wasn't arbitrary and capricious. In fact, the only doctor who testified in all of these proceedings, one physician, one doctor, Dr. Blue, who incidentally is the past president of the Tarrant County Medical Society, a very premier doctor, testified that that was reasonable. It was reasonable for them at that time to say, no, we don't really want to do a psychiatric evaluation yet. Let's continue to try medical approaches. And at the time that they were removed, they had just been told by a psychoneurologist to consult a behavioral analysis, which is what they were doing. It's what they were in the process of coordinating when they were removed ex parte without notice. And with regard to the second ground being the stated intent over and over to continue providing her with screwdrivers, both times the guardian ad litem asked his witness as to whether they had continued to say they would continue to supply them. The witness quickly corrected him and said no. They didn't say they were going to continue to provide them. In fact, they said if you find them, take them away. That's what the record reflects as far as the screwdrivers. In addition, the screwdrivers were, this is undisputed, they were never used as weapons. They were never used to threaten. There was never an issue with the screwdrivers. When she was approached by Mr. Wallace, part of the group home personnel, about why she had them, she told them that they were her toys. So that's ground number two. Ground number three, the arbitrary and capricious decision to discontinue Zoloft. Well, the record reflects, and I think it's important if I could point the court to an exhibit, the trial exhibit, it's applicant's exhibit number four. This is a very important document. It was admitted with no objection. And this document explains exactly why the Covingtons made the decisions that they made with regard to the medications. And it's this exhibit right here, with in addition to Exhibit 5, where we have the group home's own records reflecting that Mrs. Covington contacted the doctor who had prescribed the Zoloft. And let me back up. I'm getting ahead of myself. The group home unilaterally decided that they were going to get a prescription for Zoloft for Ceci. They didn't tell the Covingtons. A group home staff member noticed that she had a flat affect as a result and was maybe having some more behavioral issues. And Mrs. Covington became aware that that the Zoloft had been prescribed, and then she went and saw that there was a correlation between the intensifying of the headaches and the taking of the Zoloft, called the group home and said, hey, I think we should back off of the Zoloft that you've prescribed for my daughter without telling me, and so maybe we should do that. The group home contacted the doctor. The doctor immediately discontinued the Zoloft. He didn't say, no, she needs to be on the Zoloft, keep her on it. He discontinued it.
Was he a psychiatrist?
I'm not sure if he's a psychiatrist. I wish I knew the answer to that, Your Honor. Maybe I can get that for you on rebuttal.
Well, it's in the record.
It is, okay. And I'm sorry that I don't know that. I should know that. But that having been said, the doctor recommended that Mrs. Covington do some research and consult a neurologist, which is exactly what she did. This is not a situation where these people were denying their daughter medical care and attention. They were aggressively seeking effective medical treatment to treat these issues at the time that they were removed. Which leads, actually kind of dovetails into the whole issue of self-diagnosing the headaches. The applicant's Exhibit 4 reflects that she was actually diagnosed, and I'm probably going to mispronounce this, with occipital headaches. She was diagnosed by a neurologist with occipital headaches. This was not self-diagnosing. These were diagnoses by doctors. And then finally, the dangerous over-the-counter medications and supplements that they were providing without telling the group home, the only two occasions that they can point, number one, there was never any supplements. There's no evidence in this record of any supplements. The only two that they can point to were that Mrs. Covington went and got Ceci an injection, and then at another point administered some prescription medication to her after the group home refused to do it. In both situations, the group home knew about it because she told them she was doing it. She asked them to administer the medication. They refused, and so she did. And importantly, Dr. Blue testified that that was appropriate under the circumstances. So none of these five counts was proven. By a preponderance of the evidence, the Covingtons established that not one of these five conducts was established by the record, and therefore there was no basis to remove them. And respectfully, Judge King should have set aside the order removing them and reinstated them, which is what we're asking this court to do. And the alternative, we're asking the court to remand with some indication that that's what ought to happen in the trial court level.
Is there a problem with Judge King, according to your side, relying in part on the record from the previous trial hearing?
There is, Your Honor, and I don't think that's a huge issue in this case, but I thought that it was important that it might be helpful to the court in looking at this. That yes, the procedure for Judge King to have actually taken judicial notice of the proceedings before Judge Furchill would have been that they would have had to have been admitted into the record, and they weren't. So anything that happened in the removal hearing is not something that Judge King can take judicial notice of. That's my only point there. Not that
There's no specific finding that relied solely on the records from the hearing.
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Okay.
That was just a sort of throw-in that he did toward the end of the hearing. By the way, I'm taking judicial notice of whatever happened before Judge Virchel, and I think I can do that. And I'm happy to answer any other questions the court might have. Thank you very much.
Mr. Brown? I'm sorry.
Thank you, Judge. May it please the court. As the court has already observed, this is not an appeal of the removal process. That took place in front of Judge Furchill. There was no motion for new trial. There was no notice of appeal. Judge Furchill's judgment became final. There may have been some technical errors in it. There is a bill of review pending. The technical errors will be corrected. This was a reinstatement procedure and solely a reinstatement procedure. Under the probate code, it's very clear. The Covingtons had the burden to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that they did not engage in the conduct that directly led to their removal. Well, if you break that down, the first thing they have to prove is what was that conduct. Counsel says there was inappropriate taking notice of previous procedures. If Judge King did not have before him whatever those procedures were, then are they judicially admitting they did not prove what those behaviors were that led to the removal? There was no stipulation. There was no other offer of proof. He refers to my allegations in pleadings. That's not proof. Those are allegations. So I think you have at the very start an admission on their part. They did not prove what were the behaviors that directly led to the removal. Well, okay, so let's jump ahead. Let's assume that they are all five of the things that were in fact alleged. As the court has observed, any one of those would have supported the judge's removal. And again, that was not pled, proved, appealed, specified. Which one of the five? Was it one of the five, four of the five, three of the five? So I think this court has to indulge in the presumption of validity of the underlying judgment. Any one of those, if they were proven to have existed, supports the removal. Again, back to their burden. This is an appeal of Judge King's hearing, where Judge King was the trier of fact, a trial before the court. Judge King had the benefit of listening to the witnesses, observing their demeanor, listening to their voice. He had all of those benefits that, unfortunately, this court does not have. And that's why the law is very clear. The presumption is he did not abuse his discretion if there is any credible, probative evidence supporting his finding. In my brief, I go through in great detail how many of the witnesses, over and over, all of the witnesses at some point had some testimony that supports each of the five allegations. Each one of them was supported by some credible probative evidence. Was it uncontroverted? Of course not. They, of course, controverted it. So there's pluses and minuses, but again, with all due respect, it is not for this court to say we would have decided differently. The question is, did Judge King have anything to hang his hat on when he made that finding? Clearly, there's plenty in the record to support his findings. Counsel interjects the word arbitrary and capricious. That's not what was pled. Those words are nowhere in the pleadings. It's without justification. And that's what Judge King found based on the testimony of Mrs. Covington herself and the other witnesses. Now, there was one expert witness, Dr. Blue, and again, Judge King is the trier of fact, has the sole discretion as to how much credibility to put into that testimony. He's not bound to follow it. He can find that it's credible, find that it's not credible. And what she testified to was she had not examined Ceci, the ward. She had not interviewed the Covingtons, and she had not spoken to a single employee of the group home. She read the medical records. She read the medical records that were provided at the choice of the Covingtons, which is one of the problems that was alleged. They were picking what information to give the doctors. They were picking what information the doctors could give back to the group home. This engaging of filtering of evidence is what we're talking about when we're talking about self-diagnosis. The reason the medical records say headaches is because the Covingtons would walk into the doctor's office with their daughter and they'd say, my daughter's having a headache. The doctor hasn't observed that. He wasn't there when she was having the headache, but he makes a note in his medical records, daughter having headaches. So the word headaches gets put in there. I know that she did not. And it is. She testified that nowhere in her review, I asked her, what about the booby traps? She said, I didn't see anything in the records about booby traps. The booby traps were part of the documentation of the group home that was part of the aggressive behavior alleged in count one, where Ceci, the ward, was talking to the imaginary people, intentionally trying to harm staff. That sort of aggressive behavior that Judge King found was not being controlled. So what it boils down to, the question for this court, I believe, is there any credible, probative evidence on any one of the counts to support Judge King's judgment? If there is, this court should affirm. There's no reason for a remand. Judge King has heard the evidence. We don't need to go back and hear it again. He's heard the evidence. He's made his ruling. That's what is before the court today. If they had appealed Judge Furchel's order, we could have gotten into whether any of this would have constituted clear and convincing. We could have gotten into whether this was really an abuse or neglect. That all could have been brought before this court, and they chose not to. They relied simply on the reinstatement statute. Burden on them to prove they did not engage in the behavior that directly led to the removal. And they've already said, how did the court know what that behavior was? Because that was never admitted. I'd ask you to affirm. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any rebuttal?
With the court's permission.
If I could just very quickly, may it please the court, sorry, if I could just very quickly address Justice Gardner's question earlier about the physician who discontinued the use of the Zoloft and referred Mrs. Covington to do some research and see a neurologist. That doctor was actually a primary care physician, not a psychiatrist, just so I can answer that question. I want to talk a little bit about Dr. Blue. Dr. Blue is important here, and of course, the approach that the guardian ad litem is going to take in this case is the trial court was the trier of the facts and the judge of the credibility and could choose to believe or disbelieve and all the stuff that we've heard over and over and over again. The problem is that the Supreme Court's opinion in City of Keller says that's not always true. City of Keller, the legal sufficiency analysis, and I'm going to quote it. A fact finder cannot ignore undisputed testimony that is clear, positive, direct, otherwise credible, free from contradictions and inconsistencies, and could have been readily controverted. Respectfully, no. Dr. Blue is a doctor. These are members of the staff that have not had the necessary medical training, the psychiatric training, psychological training to make any sorts of the suggestions, for instance, that they're making of multiple personality disorder.
So this case that you decided is going to say that a doctor who has not seen a patient, has not talked to the parents, has not talked to any of the people who work at the group home, trumps legally by law.
Of course not, Your Honor. That's not what the case is going to say. It's going to say that testimony like hers needs to be controverted, and I would submit to the court that that means by another doctor, not by a bunch of people who don't have the training and knowledge and experience of a doctor and their own subjective viewpoints. And I think it's important to point this out. Of course, the response to Dr. Blue is, well, she says that she never actually met with Sessie or the Covingtons. Well, she did review voluminous documents. If you look at the applicant's Exhibit 2 that was admitted at the reinstatement hearing, it lists everything that she looked at. She spent over 30 hours developing her expert opinion in this case. And she did it, yes, based on documents provided by the Covingtons, but I think that Justice McCoy had a great point. Well, was there any sort of demonstration that those documents weren't enough for her to be able to form a medical opinion on? Did you have a controverting medical expert come in and say, well, they left this out? And if she'd seen this, she would have concluded, oh, yeah, no, absolutely, the Sessie needs to have a psychiatric evaluation. No, none of that happened. The only medical testimony that we have is from Dr. Blue, and Dr. Blue said what they did was reasonable. And her testimony, respectfully, is clear, positive, direct, and otherwise credible. That's the problem here. Now, there was something so we'll talk about the appeal. Here was the issue with the appeal. The probate code specifically provides for a motion to reinstate. The procedure is you're removed, you can get reinstated. Our concern was that if we went and directly appealed, that that removal order, that the court would say, we don't have jurisdiction because there's still stuff that you can do down in the trial court and you need to do that. That was the concern there. Because of this indefiniteness in probate court proceedings and finality, because of this very hazy area of the law, which is far from well settled as to what's appealable and what's not. That's the issue there. The petition for bill of review was filed out of an abundance of caution, just to make sure that we had covered everything that we needed to cover. That's why that was filed. The last thing that I'll say, subject to any questions, of course, is that what the guardian ad litem is ignoring are all of the mens rea requirements of his counts of conduct. He's completely ignoring the fact that he said, without reason or excuse, over and over again, there is evidence of reasons and excuses in here by a medical professional, Dr. Blue. He's just completely ignoring those and asking the court to do that, and I respectfully request the court not to do that. And if there are any further questions, I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, we just ask that the court reverse this and either render an order reinstating the Covingtons or remand for further proceedings. Yes, Your Honor. I would think that if the court were inclined to reverse, the court's opinion might be somewhat instructive if the court determined that further proceedings in the trial court were necessary, and at least strongly suggested the trial court that reinstatement might be a good idea or a new trial, something along those lines. And I really want to be sure I've answered your question, Your Honor. Did I not answer your question?
Just ask what trail you're going down. Okay.
Just if further proceedings are necessary, just some sort of indication from the court what those further proceedings ought to be.
I would like that.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your argument and your cases. Excuse me. Your case is submitted and you're excused.